So you're listening to Recovery Radio, and it's an outreach of the Latah Recovery Center. Sorry to cut you off, Johnny, but I figured I'd give you a break.
Go for it.
Located at 531 South Main Street in Suite B, Moscow, and their phone number is 208-883-1045. And their hours are Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Their web address is www.latahrecoverycenter.org. And their email address is latahrecoverycenter@gmail.com. And you can also find them on Facebook and Twitter. Recovery Radio's mission is to share with our community how recovery from addiction and mental health issues affect us all, and to make our community aware of recovery resources available in our area, and to share the personal stories of people in recovery, highlighting their experiences, strengths, and hope for continuing in recovery. I'm Denise Miller, and I'm grateful to be in recovery today and grateful to be here. And my awesome co-host, Johnny, tell us about you.
I'm Johnny, and I'm a grateful recovered alcoholic, recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. I'm glad that was only a transitional period I went through of 35 drunken years. But I am also glad to be here and glad to be of service and put this little radio program and some information out to the world. So hopefully somebody else can find some recovery if they need it.
Absolutely. So today, started a book club, probably 3-4 weeks ago, with some members of Celebrate Recovery. And it's actually been really cool. The book's called Daring to Lead by Breanne Brown. And one of the things I get to do in recovery is learn, just take in new information and ponder what I'm doing with my life and how to better it and stuff like that. Anyways, I'm gonna see if I can do it justice in trying to explain before I read out of the book. But Breanne Brown is just amazing, and I've really been enjoying reading her book. And I think it's basically meant to be geared towards workplaces and how organizations work well together to, basically thrive and do well, treat their employees well, have good leadership in the management, and I think that like Schweitzer might be a good example of a good company that I've heard really good things about.
Yeah, they're
where they're supportive and stuff.
Yeah, they definitely do a good job at conveying their company values, we'll say, and the way they like to see things done to their new employees. There's used to be almost a full week of classes that you had to attend, really almost even before you went to whatever job position it was.
Sure.
And that was universal across the entire company. Mm-hmm. Marketing and engineering to assembly, shipping, receiving. I mean, everybody.
So basically they're training you so that you have some tools, and you know what you're doing.
Right, right.
So you can learn.
At least they're telling you what their values are, what their processes are supposed to look like, how it all comes together. Yeah, and they did a real good job of that. They put a lot of effort into trying to give the people, like you say, the tools. Mm-hmm. To do their jobs and live in the environment with at least a reasonable sense of understanding.
Right. I feel like for me, it's like people will ask me to do things that I haven't done before, join in this book club or do this or that. And I'm like, well, as long as there's some guidance on what this looks like, mm-hmm. and we're working on this together, I'm good. When people explain things and I can ask questions.
Right.
And that's just a tiny little dot of, part of what she talks about is, to being able to ask questions and for no one to feel stupid and, you don't shame anybody. And
right, right. And
all sorts of stuff.
And SEL was really good to me, when I suggested Naked Tuesdays, and they said, no, we really can't do that.
They said it really kindly. That's cool. So,
I did not really do that.
Yeah.
That was purely for shock.
That was actually a pretty good joke there. So so I have to ask the listening audience to bear with my reading here. But I give this a go. So I'm listening to the audio and I have the book, and it's just been really, really good taking in all this information. And for me, I mean, yeah, maybe it applies a little bit to my workplace, and it will more in the future. But for me, it's a lot on like a, more of a personal level that I'm learning how to interact better with my friends and my family and things. So I'm going to read this out of section 3, and it's called The Armory, and it gives...
What's the name of the book again?
So it's Daring to Lead. Did I not mention that? Yeah, Daring to Lead by Brian.
You may have, and I missed it.
Yep, no, it's okay. So we're all in a part of this, number 3, Armored Leadership, and it's called Numbing. Now, when I listen to this, I think I got a little choked up. And early on in the introduction, Brianne explains that she attended AA and stuff like that. So from my standpoint, as I was reading and listening to this, I was like, okay, cool. This is a person who understands my world. And so here we go. We all numb. We all have different numbing agents of choice. Food, work, social media, shopping, television, video games, porn, booze, from beer in a paper bag to the socially acceptable but equally dangerous fine wine hobby. But we all do it. And when we chronically and compulsively turn to these numbing agents, it's addiction, not just taking the edge off. So I'll just stop and say, so she really got my attention when she said this. Because early on in recovery, I had heard about cross addiction and different kinds of things. And I was just thinking, well, you know, addiction's just about drugs or alcohol, you know, there's nothing else. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. At least, you know, as it applied to me, you know, I'd heard the expression workaholic, but, you know, I thought that was just somebody's funny way of saying they think they work too much.
Right. Yeah. So anyways, I had to pause there for a second.
Yeah.
Statistically, every person holding this book is affected by addiction. If it's not you, then it could be a close friend, colleague, family member. No matter who or how, if you're paying attention, you've had a front row seat to the pain, the suffering, and the cost. According to the National Council on Alcohol and Drug Addiction, dependency, 70% of the estimated 14.8 million Americans who use illegal drugs are employed, and drug use costs employers $81 billion annually.
That's there, billion with a B.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, and this book was written recently, pretty sure.
Wow.
Yeah. So there is no us and them when it comes to numbing. We all do it. The question is to what degree? And when we are talking about the pain surrounding addiction, it's never a self-contained storm. It's a tornado. Numbing, or taking the edge off, doesn't have the same consequences as addiction, but they are nevertheless severe and life-altering for one reason. We cannot selectively numb emotions. If we numb the dark, we numb the light. And if we take the edge off the pain and discomfort, we are by default taking the edge off of joy, love, belonging, and other emotions that give meaning to our lives. Think of the hard emotions as thorns with very sharp points. When they prick us, they cause us discomfort, even pain, just as the anticipation of fear of these feelings can trigger intolerable levels of vulnerability in us. We know it's coming. For many of us, the first response to vulnerability and discomfort of these sharp points is to not lean in to the discomfort and feel our way through, but is to make it go away. We do that by numbing and taking the edge off the pain with whatever provides the quickest relief. Again, we can anesthetize with a whole bunch of stuff, including alcohol, drugs, food, sex, relationships, money, caretaking, gambling, staying busy, affairs, chaos, shopping, planning, perfectionism, constant change, and the internet. See why I thought this was pretty good?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm deep in it here.
Yeah. So going over, skipping about a page, she talks about her going into AA and trying to find her way around that, which is very interesting, but I figured I should skip over to this. So this part is entitled Setting Boundaries and Finding Real Comfort. Our research shows that participants name vulnerability, resentment, and anxiety as the biggest drivers of numbing and resentment is almost always related to the lack of boundaries. We are knee-high and vulnerable. Oh, wait, skip. Oop. Okay. Sorry. There's some stuff that talks about what's going to be on later on in the book. Okay. Keeping an eye out for resentment in your life when you're in hour three on Facebook and when you're about to finish off an entire pint of Ben and Jerry's or whatever you have just spent most of your paycheck online shopping. The bottom line, like most of you, I wasn't raised with the skills and the emotional practice needed to rumble with vulnerability. So I resorted to numbing. Over time, I basically became an anything to take the edge off aholic. But there are no specific programs for that. So I cobbled together a plan of meetings and a great therapist and a new spiritual practice that worked for me. In the end, the cure for numbing is developing the tools and practices that allow you to lean into discomfort and renew your spirit. First, when we're feeling that edge, instead of asking ourselves, what is the quickest way to make these feelings go away? Ask, what are these feelings and where did they come from? Second, figure out what brings you real comfort and renewal, not just numbing. We deserve real comfort. Author Jennifer London calls our numbing devices shadow comforts. When we are anxious, disconnected, vulnerable, alone, and feeling helpless, booze and food, work and binge-watching, endless hours of TV feel like comfort. But in reality, they are only casting their long shadows over our lives. London writes, shadow comforts can take any form. It's not what you do, it's why you do it that makes the difference. You can eat a piece of chocolate as a holy wafer of sweetness, a real comfort, or you can cram an entire chocolate bar into your mouth without even tasting it in a frantic attempt to soothe yourself, a shadow comfort. You can chat on message boards for half an hour and be energized by the community and get back to work. Or you can chat on message boards because you're avoiding talking to your partner about how angry he or she made you last night. What emerged from our data on numbing was exactly what London speaks to. It's not what you do, it's why you do that makes the difference. The invitation is to think about the intentions behind our numbing choices. And if helpful, to discuss these issues with family, close friends, or a helpful professional. So yeah.
A lot of information there. I kind of like the shadow comfort, that phrase, because it's not really, I'm just trying to think of how I can interpret that in my mind. And my brain is always very close to full. So,
right. I know. I feel like lately I've been the same way. It's like 2 hours later, I'm like, oh yeah.
I've got to clear some of the buffer. I believe the brain has a buffer on input, and in order for something new to come in, something has to go out, which is why I forget names. or at least that's my theory and I'm sticking to it.
Right.
And it was funny what I really related to in that little bit there, where she talks about you can have a piece of chocolate and it's just a wonderful thing, or you can cram a whole chocolate bar in your mouth. And I'm thinking about when I eat popcorn. If for some reason my mouth and I am not happy unless there's like an entire handful being stuffed in there.
It's like not the time that you'd want to be like looking good, sitting and eating. Because and I do that too, the movie theater. Thank God it's dark, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Because, I look like I'm starving to death and I don't know how to eat politely at all.
Yeah, right.
So I relate.
Exactly. Nobody knows who's doing that smacking or chewing on ice or whatever. But yeah, that's a real thing, and I can apply that to other things in my life too. When I like to do a lot of research on for our program and for and other things that just interest me in life in general, and it's very easy for me, and I'm fortunate I catch myself, but I do what I call going down the rabbit hole.
Mm-hmm. What does that look like?
I will see something that catches my attention. I will focus on it, and I will drill down, and I will find something else related to it, and I'll drill down, and then it's like 12:45, and I'm supposed to be at the radio station.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not that I lose track of time. It's that I lose interest.
Yeah.
and everything else. Because
you're focusing on like one thing?
Suddenly, suddenly this becomes the most important thing in my life.
Sure.
Now, I don't relate that to my addiction necessarily because it doesn't involve consuming huge amounts of alcohol. But indeed, it's a part of what in AA we call a character defect. And the defect is not being present and accountable for the things you've promised to do. You know, I still can and still do become incredibly selfish and self-centered. And that's the root of it. This is very interesting to me. And my brain, you know, something says, you need to get in the shower, you need to get ready to go, you need to be somewhere at this time. And my brain just pushes that back and says, shut up.
Well, because
we're
into
this now.
Right? Because I'm thinking like that could be like a really good trait to have if it was like put into play correctly, because that means that you could sit down and do research or do something without being distracted by other things. Mm-hmm. But you'd have to figure out a way to have an alarm that you listen to.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Because that's kind of the thing. Some people, you know, get distracted super easily. They'll be reading something or doing, you know what I mean? And then I need it. Yeah. Right. Exactly. So I'm like, wow, you know, from an outside perspective, like that could be really helpful as long as you kind of got like a little help with the part where, you know, you might be late for something, but that's pretty cool. Cause you're like, you're curious and you can dive into stuff and that's kind of cool.
And we're told, a lot, you know, in our work life, you know, we're told you need to focus in on this, you know, you need to make this a priority, and that's all fine. I remember in my work life, I did literally set alarms. So I would get up once an hour because I was basically chained to a desk and a computer screen.
Sure.
I would get up once an hour and just do a lap around the floor I worked on, come back and sit down. And that was mainly, you know, I needed to give my hands a rest so I didn't, you know, get carpal tunnel.
Right.
I needed to stretch my legs and my back and also get the blood flowing because some of the work I did, I mean, required intense focus and at the same time was mind-numbing repetition. You know, I got to do the same thing to 400 drawing sets. You know, but I would literally set alarms on my phone or on my computer screen. And when it went ding, I just stopped. And I had to learn to do that because it would be, okay, here we go. It's 8 in the morning. I'm starting in on this. And I look at the clock and it's 2 and I haven't eaten lunch.
Right. And then you're hungry.
Maybe I got up and got a cup of coffee. Yeah.
Right.
Or maybe I'm dozing off and I woke up because my head hit the monitor as I, you know, nosedived into it. It is a good thing, but, you know, like so many things, double-edged sword.
Yeah, sounds like it. Well, and it's like they talk about in early recovery about make sure that you're eating 3 times a day. And like, even if you need to set alarms, because before we may not have done that, you know.
Right, exactly.
So
we're learning new habits. And what she's talking, getting back to the reading, which was fascinating, you know, she cobbled these ideas together, you know, and along with working with a therapist, which I think for some people is a great thing. I'm kind of, you know, an alcoholic and drug addicts that I know, we're kind of backwards people. So we have to do actions to change our thinking, where most quote normal or healthy people can change their thinking and their actions will follow. Not me. I have to actually do it and then recognize that the reward was worth doing it differently. You know, I'm not in jail or, you know, on a 3-year
bender. The scale is
again.
A little different. Yeah.
The execution is different, but the process is the same. And, you know, she also talks about it doesn't have to be, you know, alcohol or dope. You know, it can be workaholism. It can be spending too much time on Facebook. Oh my God, I know people that basically their lives revolve around Facebook. And they try and interact with me about it, and I really don't do Facebook. I only do it in as much as it's a media tool for me to get information out about this.
Sure.
You know, which is more person to person, even though we're going out through the ether to our tens of fans and maybe some other people.
So it's like a tool. It's a resource for what
you're doing. Yeah, it's a resource, but it's not a lifestyle for me. You know, but I can understand why people get into it. When chat rooms were big years and years ago, every once in a while I'd find some interesting topic, usually based on recovery, and I'd get into this chat room, and wow, 3 hours later, it's like, oh my, you know, I had no intention of being on here this long, but.
Time moves faster for some reason when you're doing that, like literally. I don't know what's up with that, but it does.
Yeah, I'm sure Einstein had a theory on it, but
I'm sure
we didn't have the interwebs. So.
I've just noticed.
Yeah. MC equals,
me.
You know, time spent on the computer squared or something and black holes and. God, there's. I'm sure that
there's
I'm sure we have
time
a,
difference.
I'm sure there's a.
I don't know what it would be.
I'm sure there's a theoretical physicist listening to us out there somewhere who can now obsess on that and see if,
let us know
if time does actually fly when you're having fun. So yeah, okay. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't we take a quick break here? Yeah. Listen to some tunes and being as we're talking about numbing today. I think I found some appropriate music from Pink Floyd, a little song called Comfortably Numb.
You're listening to KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
There is no pain.
And we are back on Recovery Radio on KRFP in beautiful Moscow, Idaho. I'm Johnny. She's Denise. And Denise, what were we talking about?
So we were, I read a little bit from Dare to Lead by Brianne Brown. And it was the area of her book that was about numbing. And she really points out some great things, things that I've kind of learned over the last 5 years. But I thought she put it really well, so I read about it. And so, you know, I don't know. It's been kind of cool over the last 5 years. I've learned a lot of different things. And because I'm good with being in small groups and being around people, and I like that, I've really enjoyed listening to other people and what they shared, so that my recovery isn't about just about what I know, just as you have as well, you know.
Right, exactly.
You get to hear about what other people talk about and what they've gone through. So when she talks about that, there's things that we do that, you know, numb the feelings that we have. I mean, I totally get that today. I really do. Whether it's food or shopping. And so over the past couple years, I've really started to pay attention to my thoughts and the choices that I make. So I see that pretty clearly in myself. Recently, about a week and a half ago, I quit smoking. I was a cigarette smoker. Yeah, yeah. Totally excited about that. And it's going well. I was a cigarette smoker from the age of 13. So this is my longest standing habit.
Right,
for real, like
right.
Crazy. Uh-huh. And there have been times for pregnancies and also a year ago that I had quit. So, you know, there's been, say, like 6 months to a year that I've quit on and off throughout my life. But nothing, obviously, that stuck. And so I've been paying attention to myself now and trying to make sure that I don't replace it with something else. Like, for instance, since food is, you know, the thing that you have every day, and, you know, that could be a problem. I was just going to say that I don't have enough money to take up a shopping problem. So we're good there, you know. But so there's some things.
But then again, when did money ever stand in the way of an addiction? Not for me anyway.
Yeah, but see, I got morals and like boundaries and priorities now. And so, you know, I don't do too bad. I mean, although there was a Saturday a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember if it was, might have actually been before I quit smoking. But anyways, yeah, that I probably went and spent a little too much money, but they're getting haircuts and shoes for the girls and things like that. And I turned around and I was like, dang it, I'm broke.
Yeah.
But those were kind of necessities.
But, yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know what I mean?
It wasn't a 65-inch big screen.
Oh, no.
HD,
yeah, I don't have the
4K, whatever.
There's no room to do that.
Yeah.
No. No. So basically, you know, I've just been kind of trying to pay attention to how that's going, because the thing of it is I don't want to gain weight. I'm kind of vain and I don't want that to happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So I'm keeping an eye on that and making sure that I, you know, keep an eye on portion control and all that kind of stuff. But I will really say, though, that, you know, after dinner's done, I'm like, oh, I could have more. And I'm like, nope, you can't, you know.
Right.
So
right.
I do see the tendency to want to find something. You know, so basically now it's gum, a little bit of candy, and a little bit of nicotine gum.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I've experienced these things that they're talking about. Like, I've had times where I've binge watched TV for like the day, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. It's easy to replace with things. And, you know, when I drank, you know, speaking specifically of numbing, I would drink. Do something, you know, either develop a resentment or just do something to embarrass myself or my family or whatever. And then I would, you know, the guilt that would come after that. And then I would need to drink to deal
right.
with that guilt, mm-hmm. which led to more, you know, bad feelings and more drinking. And it's like, you know, it's a dog chasing its tail.
Really,
it's
really
a vicious
bad.
Cycle. And, you know, and alcohol works really good for that,
yeah.
you know, and so do other drugs.
Right. Yeah, it's hard when things are readily available at the corner store or
right.
whatever. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Or the corner dealer. I mean,
yeah.
those guys never seem to sleep. There's
right.
always somebody who's holding something.
Mm-hmm.
I
right.
mean, that was my experience back in those days. But when it comes to other types of, you know, replacing things, you're talking about, you know, you replace the smoking with eating. That's a real common thing.
I mean, I want to.
Yeah, exactly.
Not going to, but I want
to. No, but people do. It's, mm-hmm. it's a very common thing, and you know, something they
because you got to eat. You
they
know?
Talk about, and honestly, you know, gaining a few pounds versus facing, you know, heart disease or lung cancer or something like that. It's okay with gaining a few pounds. That's a reasonable trade. However, you know, there are other things like I started really loving gambling after I quit drinking. And, you know, I started, you know, into sobriety in California, and the only place to gamble close to there was, you know, Nevada. And I didn't get up there that often, so it wasn't really a big deal. We'd go up once in a while. We'd have, you know, take a certain amount of cash. ATMs weren't everywhere. Mm, and, you know, God. When it was gone, it was gone, you know, and that's the way it worked. I moved up here. There's a, you know, one of these tribal casinos on every corner, it seems like.
You're like, dang it.
And
I love it.
You know, there were. My business at the time took me down, you know, to Lewiston, and I'd go out there, and yeah, it got to a point where it was like, oh man, I've gone way beyond, you know, throwing $20 at it mm-hmm. and saying I had a good time and walking
right.
away.
Right.
And, so I experienced that, you know, didn't quite lose the house and the car and the family and all that, but, you know, I could see it going there. Could totally see it going there. And if it weren't for this program, you know, this AA program thing that I do that, you know, has given me the tools to look at stuff that I do and realize that, you know, maybe this isn't real healthy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she talks about that. And it's really great that, you know, somebody because AA addresses, you know, alcoholism. One of the things that occurs a lot is a lot of people have multiple addictions anymore. You know, I have found that, you know, there have been other drugs I've abused in my past, but the first drug I abused was alcohol. And, you know, it was my first love and my last love, mm-hmm. despite all the other things. So when people come into AA meetings who pretty much specifically, you know, their main drug of choice was speed or opiates or whatever. And, you know, and when they drank alcoholically. And there are people who have been around the program a long time who will honestly say to them, hey, I'm an alcoholic. If you want help stopping drinking, I can help you with that. But this other stuff, you know, maybe you need a different program for that, you know, mm-hmm. NA sort of deal that focuses on that. But nonetheless, the principles about, you know, being honest, open, willing, you know, getting a good spiritual foundation in your life. You know, that can apply to all this stuff. And, mm-hmm. and she touches on that, you know,
she
says there's a spiritual aspect to it. And you have to be open to, you know, the idea that, no, spending your paycheck and then some on eBay or Wish or, you know, the whatever those furniture shopping play, Wayfair or, you know, any of those, you know, is not healthy behavior. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, getting sucked into the depths of Facebook or Twitter or, you know, all any social media. So, you know, the principles are the same, you know, and the questions are almost the same too. You know, do I do this to the, you know, to the point where the rest of my life is suffering?
Right. And then asking yourself why. And so I can relate to this stuff where when I stopped using, drugs that I, you know, there were different areas that weren't necessarily very healthy for me that I might do. And certainly didn't lead to any happiness. And so thinking about what she's saying about, like, you have to stop and, like, lean into the emotion. What is this about? Why do I want to go spend money that I shouldn't? Or why do I want to, you know, eat too much or this or that? I mean, you can make a choice whether or not you're still going to do that, but it'd be really cool if first you could think about, why do I want to do this? You know, what's the underlying emotion? Do I need to have a conversation? The interesting thing for me in the past week and a half is there's been probably at least three times where I've realized some things because I'm not smoking, because I can't go numb out those feelings, where I've been able to make different choices, in the situation. I mean, one of them literally had to do with my children and when their bedtime is, and the fact that I would run around and be like, you guys, come on, go to bed, go to bed, go to bed. And then finally I just realized, what am I doing? They're 8 and 10. So the next morning on the way to school, I said, girls, if you're not in bed by 8:30, not 8:31, 8:30, you will have no friends over tomorrow and you won't have any screen time and you can't play with your phone. They were like, okay. And guess what? They've been in bed, you know, like, right. But before I'd get frustrated and maybe go outside and have a cigarette and then nothing would change.
Right.
You know what I mean? So right. It's like, now it's like, okay, facing these things. So I guess that's just a little glimmer of hope that I have that things can, you know, become better by giving up this.
And I think what you just
described. So that's the reward to leaning into it.
Right. And I think what you just described there, that, you know, that process of getting your sweet little girls in bed on time. Mm-hmm. I can see how that relates to your, you know, also your CR. Your celebrate recovery,
yeah.
Hurts, hang-ups, and habits.
Yep. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And when you start breaking habits, all sorts of wonderful things mm-hmm. can start happening.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't suggest that, you know, anyone break the habit of brushing their teeth, you know, three times a day or,
that's
you know,
a good one.
Showering occasionally,
yep.
You know, as,
keep all your good, healthy
needed.
Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, certain habits are good and reasonable.
Self-care.
But yeah, you gotta look at, well, in AA, we talk about motives.
Mm-hmm.
You have to look at your motives, you know.
Right.
Oh, I can't control this anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm just so frustrated.
Right.
I'm going to have a cigarette because that'll right. fix everything.
Right. Oh, and I do want to mention real quick before we end, the part where she talks about boundaries. And to me, from what the little bit that I know about boundaries and what I've been reading over the past, like, I don't know, year or two, basically it's about, so I set boundaries for myself that are healthy. And a lot of them are kind of like moral boundaries as well, you know?
Right, sure.
Like, I don't want to yell at people, so I don't yell. If I
right.
do, then I'm like, I need to stop. And you know what I mean? So basically it's like being in charge of the decisions that I make for myself. You know, if you're
right.
yelling at me, then, you know, maybe we're going to have to take this conversation up later. But I try not to impose boundaries on other people. That's not what it means for me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what right. kind of boundaries and morals do I want for myself? What's acceptable for me? And I think what she was saying about having boundaries and then you will have less resentments.
Right.
I can see that because, I mean, I feel like an infant in this whole boundary setting thing, but I do see some progress.
Well, yeah. And something I talk about in AA is, you know, we're not doormats. I mean,
no.
we've got a lot of mm-hmm. stuff that we got to address.
We do.
And, you know, you can proselyte yourself in front of people and, oh, I'm so awful and, you know, do what you have to do. And that's not really the point.
But eventually,
you know,
that's not going to help. Yeah.
We're not doormats. And, mm-hmm. you know, if a spouse or somebody keeps bringing up, well, you were, is perfectly acceptable to say, yes, I was.
Mm-hmm.
However,
right.
I am sincerely trying not to be.
Right.
And part of my sincerely trying not to be has to do with not accepting, you know, that. Those
right.
verbal beatings that
right.
you're,
you don't get to, yeah,
me.
You don't get to bring up something from 10 years ago
right.
every other month
right.
and beat me over the head with it.
Right,
yeah.
exactly.
Yeah.
Because not only is it not helpful, it's not healthy. If I need to address it, let's sit down quietly
right.
and talk about
gonna
it.
I was going to say, there are ways for
and,
sure
and,
to do that.
And, you know, if it solves it for you, fine. If it doesn't solve it for you, rest assured that I gave it my best shot.
Mm-hmm.
And if it comes up again, don't mind me if I turn your volume down mm-hmm. and go do something else because I have the right to do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
and it does happen. It does happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
so,
you know, I'm sure my wife could have completed one of those giant Rolodexes, and she could just spin that sucker, stick her finger in there, and come up with something really stupid I did at some point in our relationship, because 37 years is a lot of time of screwing up. And she could, there, sucker, see that? See that? You remember that? And I'd be like, well, you did something, you just don't remember it for as long,
which is probably good.
Right, exactly. But, you know, we work on those things together. Yeah. And, you know, if it gets to a point where I can't deal with it, I'll just say, hey, you know what? I'm not in a mind frame to deal with this right now. So you go ahead without me.
Oh. Yep.
Well, we are up against the wall here, and Craig's going to be coming in pretty soon. So thank you, Denise, for a great topic today.
That was fun.
It was another one of those times where we could have had a 2-hour show and it would have been,
okay.
Still not enough time. So, but that's wonderful. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you, Johnny.
Thank you. You're welcome. I'm welcome. We're all welcome. And
we're going to go out and enjoy that sunshine.
Yeah. Get out there and enjoy it, people. It's going to be awesome.
Yep.
And, you know, it's kind of like I always say, if you always do what you always did, you're always going to get what you always got. And if you think you got a problem with drugs and alcohol, you do.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble, you might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil, to serve somebody. Maybe a rock and roll addict dancing on the stage. Money, drugs at your command, women in a cage. You may be a businessman or some high degree thief. They may call you doctor or they may call you chief, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, you are. You're gonna have to serve somebody.
Serve somebody.
Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.